So we're here at Gamescom 2024 with Dennis Shirk, executive producer at Firaxis for the new Civilization game. Thank you so much for being here with me. Maybe you can start by telling us a little bit about your role in the development of the game.
Sure. I've been at Firaxis for 19 years, working on Civilization games almost the entire time.
Nice.
And on Ed came to us at the beginning of Civilization 7. This is when he was working on the prototype before the pandemic started, and said, I've got a new concept. He had always talked about that Civ 4, 5, and 6 were all iterative, and he wanted to try something new because our fans always were able to predict exactly what we were going to do with every Civilization game. The order that the content came out, the systems that were going to be in the game, and he wanted to turn that on its head a little bit.
Okay.
Still keeping the same foundation and that core game loop, but turn it on its head. So I'm basically Ed's right-hand man when it comes to making sure that his team has everything they need to get the game done. Yeah. So the production team just exists to grease the wheels of production and make sure that that everything is progressing forward, removing the roadblocks, the whole nine yards. So we've been at this since just before the pandemic, and it's been exciting. It's been a lift because we made a very, very big game. It's probably our biggest release I'm pretty sure it's our biggest release that we've ever done in terms of a Civilization game, and really excited to actually be here showing it to everybody. Ed's in the next room doing interviews now, and we can't wait for our fans to actually try it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like just conjecture and hypothesizing online. We love reading that. When we go back to our rooms at night, we're like looking at all the baits going on or trying to imagine how things are working. Super exciting.
So are players predicting something already that wasn't actually shown in the gameplay showcase, but that's actually true?
Oh yeah, some stuff they're actually like figuring out. Mm-hmm. Like the biggest conversation going on right now is the separation of leaders and civs and how you change civilizations.
Yes.
And players are starting to understand that it's not, at first when we first announced it, they were like, what do you mean? You're just changing civilizations now and this, now and that. And they're starting as they see more and more of the articles and the streamers coming out that it's not a binary switch. It's cultures merging with each other. So now you start as Egypt and now you've merged with something else based on the way that you're playing the game and based on the way that your people are changing. We talk about it like Rome and the way that there are Roman seeds throughout the world, particularly in Europe, woven into everybody's people. Everybody has a little bit throughout their history, can trace it back and find something that originated back in history that ties back to Rome and a lot of places of the world. And that's how he approached making this game. So we see players starting to dawn that, okay, I'm starting to see what they're thinking here, but I really have to play it. I really have to see what that feels like. And we're in the same boat. We want them to play it and want them to see what it feels like. So, yeah.
Awesome. You mentioned that actually compared to the predecessors, that civilizations can evolve and can change. One other feature that was also announced is that you can now select leaders independently from civilizations.
Yes.
So are there any limitations except for the resources and the objectives that you have to fulfill to select leaders?
So you only have one leader throughout the game.
Yeah.
You pick a leader. The AI leaders only have the same leader throughout the game because that's who you have the relationship with. That's who you love and hate. When you in Civ 6, you start next to Montezuma, you know that's going to be a problem the whole game because he's really aggressive, and that's who you love-hate the whole way through the game. It's the same thing with 7. So you have a common foe. That's how you identify each other. The limitations that come into place, there's not really limitations starting out. Okay. So if I'm Hatshepsut, I can pick from an antiquity any range that I want because we want to give players the idea of role-playing different historical possibilities. However, the game has historical recommendations when you come in. So in other words, if you come in, you select Hatshepsut. When it comes to selecting a civilization, you're going to see her portrait on two of them.
Yeah.
It says Egypt is obviously a historical recommendation. So if you're a role player like me, I'm probably going to pick Egypt. That's actually my favorite combination when I'm at the studio, not playing a restricted build. I still play Hatshepsut Egypt because I'm a culture builder.
Yeah.
And the synergy that you have in a historical pairing is really good.
Nice.
Another one example is the other historical, in this case, geographical link, is Aksum, because they're just a little bit further down the Red Sea. So it says, well, technically you can play as Egypt, but you know, let's see if you can play with this too. So that's not a limit though.
Yeah.
It's a suggestion to the player. They can try it as some other combination if they want. Maybe they've exhausted playing Hatshepsut Egypt after their, 10th playthrough, and they're gonna try a different combination. You know what I mean? Carl recommended to me the other day, you've got Augustus and you've got, Rome, but he said, you should try Ben Franklin Rome. It's a really powerful combination. So if you're a hardcore player not as much of a role player,
yeah.
but you're looking at how the synergy of numbers, how the math comes together.
Yeah.
The Franklin ability combined with Rome, he said, is a lot of fun. And I'm like, all right, I'll have to try that just to see what happens.
Yes.
So it just depends what kind of game a player wants to play.
Okay, so you're kind of broadening the different types of gameplay that you allow. Okay.
Yep.
One other question that I just have to ask. So in the gameplay showcase, we saw this huge library. Is that actually part of your office or is that somewhere outside?
That would be the most amazing office ever. No, that's the Peabody Library in Baltimore.
Nice.
We were looking for a place to shoot that. And our art director, Jason Johnson, suggested it because he said it's the most amazing looking library in the area. And when we saw pictures of it, we were like, okay, yeah, that's the place we need to shoot this. Yeah, it's local to us.
Okay.
Really amazing place to visit.
Yeah. Cool. You already mentioned this a little bit, but a bit of a personal question maybe. So what is your favorite leader in any Civilization game?
Right now, it actually is still playing that Hatshepsut combination in Civilization VII. My jam in Civilization VI has been Qin Shi Huang in China.
Okay.
Because I'm a builder and I'm a wonder guy, I'm a culture player, that was naturally suited. As an AI player, they want all the wonders. As a piece, as a person, as a human player, you want all the wonders. And he's particularly adept at doing that. So that's my favorite play in game Civ 6. If you ask me to go the whole way back to Civ 5, these all start munging together in my head. I would probably be sitting on Rome because still good at building, still good at warring. They have cultural pathways with all the roads they can build, if I remember right. I apologize to the fans if I'm crossing wires here, but after you work on civs for so many years, you start to get your wires crossed.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But Qin Shi Huang is burned into my head because I played so many games as Qin Shi Huang in Civilization VI.
So yeah, what would you say is like the average length of a Civilization VII round? Is it similar to previous games? And are there different modes and turn limits compared to the other games?
It's similar in length to Civ 6 for the whole campaign, all three ages.
Yeah.
Each age caps out, like Antiquity, the one we just showed you, it caps out at 200 turns if nobody's doing anything right. It will go a little bit faster if people are doing big accomplishments because that makes the timer go just a little bit faster for the end of the age. But generally, it's about the same length. The cool thing about ages, and it's one of the reasons that Ed decided to go with an age situation, if you remember in Civ 6, the decision space just gets wider and wider and wider in a triangle, and that doesn't mean that all the decisions are interesting.
Yeah.
So by the late game in Civ 6, you're doing a lot of just clicking and benign, interesting, uninteresting decisions. So ages allow us to keep the decision space about the same because we take some systems out, we add some systems in with each age, and we want to keep the decision space about the same in each age, except there's new and interesting decisions each time. So like Discovery, we feel that in Civ 6, as you get to the middle and late game, Discovery is no longer as interesting. In this one, Antiquity, you're discovering your continent. In Exploration, we unlock the oceans and you discover other continents. And in Modern, it's a different experience. So we always want those decision spaces to be cool. Multiplayer, we feel we've opened up. Because not everybody has 8 hours to play a multiplayer game of Civ 6. So now you can play just an age. If you want to play just a modern age experience in multiplayer, you can do that and have a game wrapped up in anywhere like an hour and a half to 3 hours or so playing on that online speed. So you can have micro experiences and just playing age play in multiplayer. So that's a really cool side effect of that.
Nice. One piece of information that really stuck with me was that the maximum number of players not only differs between platforms, but also between ages. And you already mentioned that you can also only play one age if you want to, instead of the whole campaign.
Yep.
So what's the thought process, maybe also technical limitations between that kind of led to this decision?
Sure. Ed wanted to simulate what the real world was like at the time. The new world was undiscovered until the exploration age, that kind of thing.
Yep.
And there's already going to be civs when you discover it because they get added into the game. They're actually playing the game in the background, but you can't interact with them until you actually find the continent in Exploration, for example.
Yeah.
So when we start, I believe we're supporting 8 or 10. I'd have to clarify that with Ed. I don't remember off the top of my head because I usually don't play big games. I'm a smaller game guy. Yeah. That's how I play. But the world gets bigger. You meet more civilizations as you go through the game, and you play that way. So there's not really any limitations to that other than map setup. This is an important point. Because of the way the game works and because of the way the oceans are locked, the only thing that we don't have in Civ 6 right now, unless you do it in a single age, is the concept of Pangaea.
Yeah.
Because we want the exploration to go out. The idea of finding the new world is very important to us and important to Ed. So there always has to be those core two areas on the map for you to find. You can have, you know, scattered islands, you can have different kind of shapes and really cool stuff, but it's always got to be at least two. So there is some differences there in terms of how the game progresses.
One other thing that is new this time is that you actually release the game on all platforms simultaneously.
Yes.
So how did that change the development process of the game?
It changes it quite a bit because before, when you're dealing with PC, the sky's the limit, right?
Yeah.
This is the first time that as a team, we had to create, you know, 1 billion LODs, levels of detail on all of our art assets because we knew that the game also had to play well on Switch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to go the whole way down that rabbit hole to make sure everything works everywhere. So it has changed to that. That hasn't changed the top. You can see that in the game. We've gone as high as we can on PC. It just changes our preparation for making sure that we can go in the other direction. Our graphics team was actually really excited about this because it gave them the opportunity and challenged them to create renders on every single platform because CivTech is a custom engine. We're not using Unreal or something like that. We're using our own tech. So it allowed them to really dive in and expand what the engine can actually do. So they're excited about that.
I also noticed some kind of verticality in the trailer.
Yep.
The first question was, can you confirm this? You already
did. Yeah. We introduced just the concept of sea cliffs in Civ 6, and we like what that did because it created some interesting movement puzzles. And in 7, we wanted to simulate it a little more. Rivers always have to flow outward or flow downhill.
Yeah.
So we added verticality to the map so that we can also have a little bit more of those strategic points that you have to worry about moving your armies around inland as well. So you actually have that where when we do map generation, it's not just this flat abstract of where rivers go. They all flow downhill. We have navigable rivers now, so we have to actually calculate that because navigable early nearer the coast, and then they become normal rivers further up. So that was all heavily thought into what we were doing for map generation, though.
Yeah, I love that because, like, rivers are really important in history,
right?
Yeah.
And especially now that you're navigable.
Yeah.
You bring boats up, not just embarking. You're actually going to be able to bring fighting ships up. So if you're looking to penetrate deeper into a continent and you have support ships that are coming up, it's very cool.
Awesome. Do you plan to release a demo, maybe the same one that is showing here at Gamescom, after Gamescom as well?
I don't think we're talking about that yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Civilization is a very information-heavy game. So how do you manage to keep all of the important information on the screen without burying these beautiful, stunning maps under it?
UI was a big lift for us this time. We have scalable UI in the game this time. Before, we only had limited scaling in 6, for example. Because we have to think through how console controllers work, we have to keep that in mind. That doesn't limit what the PC has. We still have tooltips everywhere on the map. But at the same token, we only want the UI to be shown that needs to be shown on the map. So we're not crowding in the screen at all times with lots of UI. We want to make sure that that world is there for you to see. So you can scale the UI out and the text size out as much as you want as your tolerance level allows.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you got a chance to play the demo yet.
Not yet.
But it's all running in 4K, so the world is amazing. The UI is set to small, text to large, so that it keeps it out of the way and you can enjoy the world. It's basically whatever your tolerance as a player is. If you want to be screen filling and like that Switch experience where the UI is there and actually readable, you can do that. If you want to push it out of the way, you can do that too.
Okay. Civilization is a long game, and it's, for some new players, it might be a little difficult getting into it.
Yeah.
So did that change somehow in Civilization 7? Are there any like onboarding things going on?
Accessibility and onboarding was a huge lift for this. We did a version of it in 6. We had like a separate tutorial, plus we had some advisors. the advisors didn't know how to communicate directly with the UI in game, so it couldn't point you at buttons or anything in 6, so we had limitations.
Yeah.
We also found out through telemetry that very few people played the standalone tutorial because nobody wants to play a tutorial, they want to play the game. So this time around, we integrated the tutorial dynamically into the game itself. And we wrote a system where the advisors and the UI can interact together and point to this and do this and click that. So we did a big lift for that. So far that's been working really great in terms of hand-holding.
Yeah.
The other nice thing is we have some natural breaking points. Because ages and the way they're set up, they have breathers. So you have a little bit of a shorter span. You don't just have to play blindly until you realize, oh, I lost. You know, you have no idea if you're doing well. We're communicating to the player how to do well, if they're doing well, and if you don't care, you can ignore it. And then you get to an age, at the end of an age, you have a natural breaking point. You take a breath, regroup, come back, and go for the next push. So it's always critical in a Civ game that we allow players that are new or casuals or emotional players to stay up here, not interact with all the complex death down here. They can stay up here, they can build warriors, they can go hit somebody with sticks until they win or they lose. We want to make sure that's simple and accessible. But when they're ready, all of this depth lives down here for them to superpower what they're doing.
Yeah, so they have different kinds of layers.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, I have one last question. Are there any other specific features that maybe weren't shown in the gameplay showcase that you want to talk about?
The Crisis system was not shown in the gameplay showcase. When this went in earlier this year, it was my favorite thing. And I don't know why, because it's a little punishing, but it's there for on a purpose. It was Ed's last piece that he had added to the game, Ed Beach.
Yeah.
We're modeling, as an example, Rome. You know, the pancake of Rome. Rome grows, gets huge. New technologies, you know, philosophy, golden age, internal crisis. It can be corruption. It can be economic, plague. Barbarians at the gates, in Rome's case, split it, scattered it to the wind. And he wanted to model a crisis system for each age in the game. Each age that you're going through is going to culminate. Everybody's doing well. The AI's doing their thing. You're doing your thing. But at the end of the age, when that age ticker ticks down towards the end, those last few turns, the game's going to ask you to slot in a crisis policy card. You have to.
Yeah.
And these policy cards represent all different play styles. Usually the first one is the one that players don't care about. I'm not playing an economic game, so I'm going to take the gold hit and do that.
Yeah.
You know, minus this much gold for every city, state, your suzerain house. But then a few turns after that, it's going to say, well, now you have to do a second one. Mm-hmm. A few turns after that, it's ramping up. Now you have to do a third one. So you put that in two. Off to the side of that is a worldwide catastrophe that's going to happen. In this case, and as an example in antiquity, Rome's case, you're going to have hostile independent powers spawning in the empty space and lashing out at whoever's closest to them. So if you're not prepared for that, if you're playing a culture game and ignored military completely, you might lose a couple cities before the age transition actually happens and you finally get to breathe having gotten through the crisis. So you always have to be aware of that as a player, that it, as you're watching the age counter turn down, that towards the end of the age, this is going to happen and you might have to prepare and fortify for that. The first time I played through it, it was a surprise because I had read the design documents, but until you play it and feel it, you're like, this is really cool, because you actually have to be prepared. You and your enemies are suddenly distracted by something else. You can't just be fighting each other. There's other things that are now happening.
So that's a really nice culmination of the age, like bringing it all together.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much for answering my questions today.
Absolutely.
And yeah, have a lovely Gamescom.
Awesome. You too.